Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, and happy new year to everybody out there who's listening. Welcome to another edition of the Blazer Banter Podcast. This week we had Robbie Calland, college football writer for Cox Media's TheFanBuzz.com, and he also does basketball writing at Hardwood Paroxysm. I'm sure you've seen him on Twitter. He also used to write for the Atlanta Hawks team website, and you can follow him on Twitter at rcalland, K-A-L-L-A-N-D. And we talked about the Hawks. We talked about a little bit of Josh Smith, since he was familiar with Josh Smith and that signing with the Rockets. Of course, we wanted to talk a little bit of LeBron. So hope you enjoy and have a happy new year. The Blazers graciously have the next 2 days off. So I'm chilling here watching some football and, you know, trying to learn a little bit more of the Atlanta Hawks. I'm talking to you.
Absolutely. This is a beat 'em down here in the dome. TCU putting it on them.
Yeah. And it's the SEC, where's, I don't hear any SEC chants.
I was almost at this game. I could have covered it, but I didn't have high hopes for it, and it is exactly what I thought it would be.
Just a whooping.
I don't think the people here are for our Peach Bowl takes.
No, they're not. They're not. I think they're here for some hoops. Blazers play the Hawks on Saturday, and the Hawks have been, at least to I would say at least probably to most outside observers and most observers of the NBA in general, are surprising people, I guess. Maybe it shouldn't be as big of a surprise considering they were so good without Horford, but or with Horford last year. But what's different about the Hawks this year? I mean, it seems like they're just a different team, and they're playing really good on both sides.
Yeah, it's a lot of it is that Al Horford's back. That's obvious. I mean, anytime you can add a top 20 player in the league, an all-star, just kind of to stabilize everything. I mean, he's such a calming force for this team on both ends of the floor. That's huge. And I think the other thing people – for whatever reason, I saw people talking about this team wasn't very deep coming in the season, and I was looking at this roster, and you could see it's huge that guys like Dennis Schroeder have taken big steps as a rookie to his second year. Mike Scott still playing good minutes, giving them good offensive production. And then I think people kind of slept on the Thabo signing. He's not an offensive guy, but the Hawks literally had nothing on the wing when Damari came out. On the defensive side, they didn't have anybody that could go one-on-one and just kind of be a lockdown type guy on the wing. When Damari was out, now you add Cephalosha to the mix and they're able to do that.
Yeah. A lot of Blazer fans obviously remember, they remember seeing Thabo back in Oklahoma City, but yeah, like, I mean, you need those. They had a good offensive system last year. I like the way that the Hawks played offensively last year, even though, you know, maybe they weren't producing at such high numbers, but I just liked their style. But, you know, to have that extra wing defender that you could bring off, I mean, the fact that he's been coming off the bench is huge. That's a lot of depth. And I'm looking at him right now, like, Shelvin Mack is like a real NBA point guard, and how often does he play? I mean, for them with Schroeder playing so well.
It's funny at this point, Shelvin kind of plays when somebody's banged up. So if Dennis is banged up or Jeff is banged up, Shelvin will get minutes. And we saw against the Cavs a couple weeks ago when he went 6 for 6 from 3 and had 24 points and led the Hawks to a 30-point win over the Cavs on the road. I mean, he can come in and he can give you that. He hasn't been great this year, but he's certainly a really good insurance option behind. He knows how to run the offense. He's a good offensive player. He doesn't make a ton of mistakes. Defensively, he has lapses, and he takes some bad shots. But he's a luxury to have as a third point guard, especially with Dennis all of a sudden transforming from a guy who couldn't see the floor last year because he just was not able to finish. He couldn't score. He played too fast. This summer, he completely changed his game. He picked up a jump shot. His mid-range jumper looks really good off the pull-up. He's finishing higher at the rim. I've been telling people all year, he used to do those little scoop shots at the rim where he just kind of like toss it up. He's finishing higher, actually laying it in as opposed to trying to do the little flip stuff where he would get blocked a lot. So he's controlling his pace better. And so his improvement has really helped because it's bolstered that second unit where Shelvin's kind of a scoring point guard. Dennis is the facilitator for that second unit.
Yeah, I'm looking at here on the basketball reference shooting splits that he's shooting 60% at the rim, which is, you know, for a point guard, that's pretty good. I mean, like, you don't see a lot of point guards usually finishing up above 60%, and that's definitely pretty cool to see. And I remember seeing Schroeder at the Nike Hoop Summit a few years ago, and I remember there was a lot of comparisons to Rondo when he was there. Do you see that at all?
I think the reason everybody goes there is, I mean, physically they look somewhat similar. Rondo's got a little more wingspan, but they're both long, huge hands. I mean, Dennis has like a 6'7 wingspan. I think Rondo's something stupid, like a 6'11 wingspan. And they both were known as, you know, Dennis came in known as a defensive guy. He gets up in you and has those long arms to disrupt passing lanes. And he also used to say his favorite players were, I think, Rondo and Chris Paul were his two guys that he looked up to or whatever. So, you know, he kind of helped those along by kind of saying, I want to play like Rondo. So I think that's part of what picked up those thoughts. But he's kind of separating himself from that comparison this year a little bit. Mainly because he's kind of got that jumper. He's finishing at the rim. He's a little more aggressive, I think, offensively at scoring than Rondo is. And he's not quite the passer. Obviously, Rajon's one of the best passers in the league, so it's kind of hard to say that Dennis is going to be equal to that. But, yeah, I mean, you see the comparisons. I think they're a little overblown just because physically they're similar.
Another guy that Damari Carroll, that I'm interested in, I like Damari Carroll. I've liked this game for a little while, but it seems like do you think some credit needs to go to Coach Budenholzer? Because it seems like he's really, you know, opened up his game a little bit. Like, I remember he was kind of just like an off-the-ball cutter guy, and it seems like in some of the Hawks games that I do see that, you know, he's got the ball in his hands more. He's doing a little bit more pick-and-roll stuff. Is that accurate to say that he's expanded his game a little bit?
Oh, a ton. The first guy to give credit to is Quinn Snyder, who's no longer here. He's in Utah now, and I think he's doing a great job out in Utah. I love Quinn as a coach. Quinn's the one who completely fixed Damari Carroll's jump shot. They worked together all summer when Damari signed, all offseason, and worked with him on – Damari will tell you he's the first coach that's ever worked with him on footwork and release, which is insane to think a player can get 4 or 5 years into an NBA career without a coach ever working with him on shooting like that.
That's crazy.
But I think it speaks to – I think a lot of guys are like that. You see a lot of guys that come in, they just don't get that attention. And Damari – for one, Damari is just a worker. I mean, he's got the whole junkyard dog thing going on where he calls himself. But he's got that persona. He works all the time. And he just does an incredible job of making sure that he's trying to improve every year. He told us at Exit Interviews last year he wants to be the African-American Kyle Korver. And he told me that a couple weeks ago, too. Like, he was like, I wasn't joking. I want to be that.
That's a step right there.
Yeah. I mean, it was a great quote.
Yeah, no, yeah, that is like, Yeah.
It's an interesting goal for a guy that was known as like a really mediocre shooter. To say, you know, I want to shoot like the best guy in the NBA. And I just think he, and then we all know what he can do defensively, but yeah, I mean, he's on the ball more. This offseason, he said a lot of his work was on dribbling. He works on dribbling before each game. And so Quinn Snyder deserves a lot of credit. Kenny Atkinson and then Bud. All the coaching staff just kind of, they've done a lot to work with him, and they give him the confidence to make plays, you know?
It seems like it's crazy how big confidence is, but continue, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's when you just kind of let guys go out and you tell them you show trust in them to make plays, especially a role guy who's going to make mistakes. You know, when you don't yank him immediately, I think that goes a long way. You know, they give Damari 30 minutes a game to play, 35 a game sometimes. So they don't just yank him because he dribbles into trouble or goes a little too hard on a fast break and misses a layup, which he does, all those things. And he does them probably once a game. He makes one play that you're just like, come on, man. But he also does such good things elsewhere, and he's become a really good spot-up shooter that his confidence is just through the roof.
Speaking of confidence, Kyle Korver, I mean, I know he's shooting 52% from the three-point line. Last year when Atlanta came to Portland, it was actually when his streak ended of I think it was like 226 or something like that of consecutive.
It was 100 something. It wasn't 200. It might have been 126, 127.
126. Okay.
It was something insane. Whatever. It was the NBA record by a lot.
Right. And that record broke when he was in Portland last year.
Right.
So I wonder if he has any, you know, any. He probably, obviously, would probably say it doesn't matter to him at all. But, or maybe he wouldn't. I don't know. But it seems like he would want to get a little bit of revenge after he didn't make any threes. And I mean, 52%. That's crazy. I'm looking at his numbers. He's shooting 93 from the line or 94 from the line, and almost 50 from the field. So yep. 50-50-90 is in play.
50-50-90 is very much in play. And it's great. He's actually been kind of cold for Kyle lately. Last like week or so, he's cooled off a smidge. He had like a 1-for-8 game, I think, in the loss to the Bucks, and we were all like, what happened to Kyle? And then last night he went 7-for-8 or something like that. So he's okay. He'll be okay. It's insane to watch him play just because, you know, you see a guy shooting 52% from three and you're like, he'll regress to the mean. And then you go, wait, maybe he won't because he's Kyle Korver. And I mean, it's a joy to watch him play on a regular basis. The way he moves off the ball is better than anyone I've ever seen in the NBA. I mean, he's got that. It's like prime Ray Allen, the way he moves off the ball. Rip Hamilton in those Detroit years when he would run off screens all the time. And he just knows how to position himself. And nobody can square their feet to the basket and get a shot off quicker than him. I mean, it's insane. You give him any airspace and he just fires. And the entire Hawks offense really works off of him. You know, I mean, he draws such attention from defenses that they play off of it all the time. They'll have, they'll run a couple pin downs and then they'll just have Millsap slip a pin down and be wide open under the hoop because both defenders go to Kyle. It's insane.
I think I saw that. I think it was Zach Lowe did a nice long piece about how much attention he commands from a defense. And you know, Blazers are, it's going to be interesting because, you know, the Blazers defense has been so good this year, which is weird to say still considering how they've been, you know, the past few years, but that's, you know, that's been what they've hung their hat on this year. It's going to be interesting to see how they guard Korver, who guards Korver. I mean, I assume Matthews and Batum will both take him and try and chase him around screens, but I mean, he's a tough test, but I don't think the Blazers played the Hawks with Horford last year, so that's going to be tough. And is Perantich, is he kind of in and out of the lineup? I obviously like Perantich because he seems like a badass, but
He's my favorite.
He's your favorite?
He's the best. That's my guy, Pero. He's really like one of the nicest human beings you'll ever meet on the face of the earth. Despite the fact that he looks like a Bond villain. he's pretty much solidified himself as the number two center on the team. I mean, he plays a fair amount. If he's out, it's usually because he's nicked up. He's had some ankle things in the past, foot issue. But he's pretty much the number two big. He started against the Cavs when Horford was sick last night. So Pero is, he's an interesting guy, and he gets a lot of flack from Hawks fans, but the team plays well when he's on the floor. Like, if you look at his on-off numbers, the team just works with him on the floor, the way he spaces the floor on offense. He doesn't always make the threes, but he does a good job of knowing where to be and making sure he's spacing the floor. And his on-ball defense is actually pretty good. He's not a great help defender, but he's a big body. He can body up guys in the post when they try to back him down, and he's long enough that he gets a few rebounds. The Hawks are one of the poorer rebounding teams in the league, so that's certainly a concern. But I guess from a Hawks perspective, it'll help not having Rolo out there. Because they definitely struggle on the glass. So I think that's a place where the Blazers really need to just attack is trying to get on the offensive boards and try to get some second chance points, because that's really a place where you can hurt the Hawks.
About Cleveland, you were there last night.
I was there.
It seems like, with all the articles that are coming out and LeBron, quotes like, "What other coach do we have?" and stuff like that. It seems like, obviously there's some drama going on there. So what did you see last night?
It's wild, man. It's, you talk to people and, guys that cover the team. I talked to some of the Cavs guys, national guys that are just happen to follow the Cavs a ton because they have LeBron. And it's, the overwhelming feeling is that no matter what he says, like, he would like to have Black gone and T. Lou as the coach. I mean, it's such a weird situation because, it kind of came down to Blatt and Tyronn Lue anyway when they were looking at getting a head coach. And then you bring the number two guy on to be an assistant, and that's LeBron's boy. What did you think was going to happen? Like, I don't know what the thought process was there. I mean, you're going to have the guy that LeBron probably would rather have coaching on the staff. As soon as things turned south, I mean, Blatt was going to get all the heat. Him and Kevin Love were the first two. I mean, it was Miami all over again. It was Spo, Chris Bosh. Those are the two that are going to get heat. And so it's, I don't know. It's such a weird situation. Everybody speculated last night that the knee soreness was really a LeBron wanting to keep making a point that he doesn't want Blatt there. Maybe it really is knee soreness. Who knows? It certainly raises eyebrows because, how many times has LeBron missed time with something like soreness, It never happened.
Yeah.
You never heard about, you have to think a guy that plays – as much as he's played, has had knee soreness, ankle soreness, back stiffness, and hasn't missed games. And then all of a sudden, it was his birthday, so maybe it was a little birthday flu. Who knows? Atlanta's a fun city for NBA players. We know this. Dwayne Wade's played one game in the last five trips to Atlanta for the Heat. Singular. One time in 3 years. He missed the first game this year. We'll see if he plays the second game. NBA players enjoy the nightlife. So maybe it's a little birthday flu, birthday knee soreness. But, you know, so maybe it's not to do with the coaching, but it doesn't help that he all of a sudden doesn't play right after these reports come out.
The timing seems just, it's just too easy, you know, to make that connection. And it's just like, you know, yeah, like you said, you know, it kind of is exactly like, you know, I was talking to a couple of Blazers about it, actually, and they were like saying, you know, it's exactly like you're saying, like it's like Spo and Bosch all over again. But the interesting point that I mean, I didn't really think about the Tyronn Lue thing when they brought him on, but that, I mean, yeah, like what was the point of keeping Blatt then? Like, why did they were just like, they brought in Blatt, to be the coach of a young team where, you know, like an impressionable team that he can like put, you know, create an identity for them and whatnot. But like, I mean, LeBron is LeBron and I mean, he comes from Europe. He's never been an assistant even in the NBA. Mm-hmm. And I mean, watching his Olympics teams and like hearing his huddles during the 2012 Olympics when he was coaching Russia, I thought, you know, it'd be like, I'd love to play for David Blatt. But like, obviously there's some things that aren't working out in his transition to dealing with NBA players. Because he can't just like, it's not like Europe where he can be like, you know, all right, well, you listen to what I say and, you know, you're getting kicked off the team and your contract's not guaranteed.
Well, and it's also like nobody in the NBA could care less if you won a EuroLeague title or two. Like they don't, like that means nothing here, you know? So it's not like he, you know, guys are just going to naturally respect him because of what he's done in Europe. Like that doesn't work for players that come over from Europe either. Nobody, you know, it's just, I don't like a lot of the stuff he's been doing. I think he's too set on his system. We talked about this before came on is there are systems, there are system places that, you know, Atlanta, San Antonio, these places that
I would even lump Portland in there.
Yeah, absolutely. There are places where you can make it work, but it's also because there's a central line of thinking from coaching to the front office to the ownership. And this just happened here in Atlanta, so I'm kind of getting used to this. there wasn't for a long time, and that was part of the problem. So you have this central line of thinking, and so all of a sudden you're constructing a roster to work for a system. The Cavs constructed a roster based off of talent, and that can work. But you have to have a coach who's willing to adapt to the talent, and I haven't seen Blatt do that.
Yeah.
He's not putting Kevin Love – we talked about this earlier. He puts Kevin Love as a spot-up shooter. They rarely work pick and rolls. They occasionally will go pick and pop, but there's no reason Kevin Love, Kyrie Irving, and LeBron James should not be just those three should just be running pick and rolls and everything should work off of that.
Well, I was watching, I think it was, I'm trying to remember which Cavs game it was earlier this week, but it was their second unit was out there. It was Waiters. And Love was out there. Love was, like, clearly the best player on the court for the Cavs for that unit. And they ran a set, and Kevin Love kind of, like, rolled down. He sealed his guy, like, right around the restricted area. And he starts clapping his hands, and he starts jumping up and down and, like, throwing a tantrum. Like, because he didn't get the ball. And, like, you know, some people might say that, like, you know, hey, that's, you know, maybe he should be more mature, but at the same time, like, he's Kevin Love, like, give him the rock. And I feel like, you know, he said this even earlier in the season, he needed post touches and stuff like that to get his game going. But like, you know, it doesn't help that Waiters is out there not giving him the rock. And then, you know, you can tell that, you know, these guys,
Waiters is getting dealt. I've talked to too many guys, scouts, personnel folk. He's gone. Like, that is without a doubt the prevailing sense around the league. And the thing is,
but who takes
everyone
him?
Knows it, so they're not giving them anything for him.
Right.
You know, it was interesting. I was talking to a couple scouts yesterday before the game about the Cavs, and we were sitting there watching them warm up, and you know, we're talking about what's not working, and the consensus is they have to get a two-way center. You know, with Andy out, nothing works if they don't have a two-way center, because if you play Tristan Thompson and Kevin Love together, there's just no defense.
Yeah, they don't even have one two-way no. center, and like the Miami teams, they had the good ones anyway, you know, Birdman and Bosch were both two-way big men.
Everybody sleeps on Bosch's defense. He was a tremendous defender.
He was excellent. He was so good at help, so good at helping blitz. I mean, he could do so many different things on defense, and that's just, you know, that's a part of the game that, you know, people usually don't look at. But, you know, when it's not there, you understand what it was missing. And, like, I mean, it sucks that, I mean, poor Andy, dude, like, that.
Every year.
Yeah, every single season, he always has this happen, it seems like. It's a major bummer but the thing is that, you know, we're talking about that they need a two-way center now, but what do they have to deal? Do they have what picks do they have left over?
That's the thing that they can
deal, because that's what they would need, because they can't give away like Waiters and, you know, Tristan Thompson or whoever isn't going to net you. I mean, they probably wouldn't even trade Christian Thompson because that's Rich Paul's client.
That's his guy.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I mean, yeah, that's the thing is they don't want to give up a first. You know, Brandon Wright seems to be the guy. You know,
interesting, yeah.
Boston just got him. Everybody, you know, you talk to anybody that's the first name that pops up when you talk to guys anybody, that, you know, media guys or scouts or really anybody, that's the first guy that kind of pops up. Boston's not using him.
Right.
They really don't have a reason to use him. So it would be interesting to see if Boston would be willing to take Dion, and I think they have a Memphis pick or a Miami pick. They have somebody's pick this year or something like that. And so they don't want to deal a first, but it's going to take a first to get rid – one, it's going to take a first to get rid of Dion. And it's going to take a first to get a good two-way center in, because they're just rare. You don't the guys aren't giving up a two-way center off their bench unless it's a team like Boston who's not going to contend. You know, they have to be somebody not contending. They have to be somebody willing to mortgage, you know, what they have now for, you know, getting future picks and that sort of thing.
I'm looking it up here right now. They've got, according to Real GM, they have a protected first round pick for 2015 so that they can deal from Memphis. So
yeah,
you were right on that one. So, I mean,
and I think the protections on that are kind of wild. It's like
1 through 5 and 15 through 30. So if it falls so between it's not, 10 you're not and 14. Get...
Yeah, so you wouldn't get it this year. You'd get it – it'd be really next year, I think, is when most of the protections come off, is 2016.
Let's see. 2016 is the same protection.
Really?
So, yeah, and then 2017, it's only top five protected, and then it becomes – and then it's top five protected again, and it becomes unprotected in 2019.
Okay.
So they can get Seventh Woods or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, so you're pretty much – you'd really have to find somebody willing to just – fire away on something.
I think Boston, the Brendan Wright trade makes more sense than, I mean, I heard the other one that obviously was thrown around a lot was Kufos, which I know that he's probably not going to re-sign. All signs are kind of pointing to that he's probably not going to re-sign with Memphis, but Memphis can win the title, and like he's kind of a big reason why they could, because most backup centers aren't as good as Kosta Kufos.
They love him in Memphis. Memphis and Atlanta are like the two places that I actually know people. And they love him in Memphis. They thought he was a steal when they got him. And they love what he can do. And he just fits their style so well, fits their team so well. I can't see them giving him up because this is as good a shot as Memphis has had in a long time to contend, you know?
Like, and this they're going to have good home, team. They're going to have home court most likely.
I mean, they're just really good. I love Mike Conley. Obviously Mark Gasol, but yeah, I mean, they finally have some depth. Vince Carter's been huge. Courtney Lee's shooting the lights out. And then you got Kostas Koufos, who comes in and plays defense, and he's got a nice little offensive game in the post that complements at what everybody else is doing. And they're too good to sell for draft picks. They're not going to do that. That's not Memphis's MO at this point. They are finally in a contention mode. They're not going to be the eighth seed this year. They're not going to be the sixth seed where they're kind of grinding from the bottom. They're, you know, people are going to have to come into Memphis, which is a horrible place to play. Nobody wants to play in Memphis. Nobody wants to go in that arena.
They came in here or to Portland, and they, like, I haven't seen anybody, you know, give the Blazers the business like the Grizzlies did when they came here. I mean, they'll
put the smackdown on you.
Yeah, they completely – and the Blazers have looked for, like – I mean, they were, like, the best team in the NBA last month. But, like, that before that month, like, Memphis came in there, and, like, when Memphis plays well, I mean, they're tough. And their offense, Marc Gasol is just – he's taken to another level this year.
He's dynamic. And Zebo, we keep waiting. We keep, like, okay, Zebo's going to get old. He's not going to – oh, he's averaging 19-8 again? Okay. Like – every his year, you're like, Zebo's – oh, he's got peak old man game. It's beautiful.
And that's the thing. Is like, I kind of want to know how long Zebo can play, because if he can continue playing like this, I mean, his game is an old man game. Like, how – it might age pretty well. Like, even
– It does. I mean, he's already up there. I mean, he came in – he was a high school guy, right?
Like, 1 year, I think. 1 year. 1 year. Yeah.
1 year college. So, like, he came in pretty young. He's been in the league for a while, and it's just – you look at it, it's like he doesn't do anything that a 35-year-old, 36-year-old won't be able to do. Like, he just – he's got impeccable footwork on the block. He never jumps higher than a phone book. He uses the wide body and seals people off. Like, no, I don't think there's any team that boxes out better than Memphis. Between Zebo and Gasol, and even like their guards, like Tony Allen is a monster on the boards. Like, he's a power forward that just never grew enough. that's what Tony Allen is, and he plays like it. And they're just built so well. You gotta give credit to them for, one, holding on to the pieces that they've held on to, like Conley, giving him the contract, like Gasol, and then for bringing in the pieces. I mean, Vince Carter was a huge signing. That's going to turn out to be one of the best signings of the offseason.
Vince, the fact that he can still do what he's able to do, I mean, he can't do it in the minutes, you know, but in that limited time, it's just as good as, like, any bench guy you'll get in the league. I mean, he's just so good in, like, he was hitting some crazy shots the other night, and he can still at his age, he can still get a shot off no matter what at 38 years old. Like, that's they always needed a guy that you could just give him the ball and he will go get you. He'll get his shot. He'll get the shot that he wants. And I feel like he does that. And like you're saying, I think that's going to be huge for them in the playoffs. You know, when I'm sure Vince Carter is going to be closing out games, you know, down the stretch against some good teams in the playoffs.
I mean, I think a couple weeks ago, he had like two or three games within a week of each other where he was just burying threes. Like, he was heat checking from 28 and just burying threes in the fourth quarter. It's incredible. Like, they play an old man style, and they're another team that is, they built themselves into a system that works. Like, they're built to play the style that they play. Like, they've done such a good job of building a core group and then putting the right pieces around it slowly but surely. And really, I mean, we all knew once they got some shooting, they would be trouble. And they finally have some shooting, and sure enough, they're trouble.
Another team in the West that they beat Memphis a couple of days ago, Houston, they signed Josh Smith. You obviously know Josh Smith pretty well.
Okay, yeah.
You covered him when he was in Atlanta. I saw you kind of tweeting about him the other day, but, you know, what do you think that does for Houston, you know, what that adds and or what that might do for them that might not be so good, I guess, you know, the good and the bad that comes with Josh Smith?
Yeah, I didn't like Houston as a fit for Josh. I really thought the Clippers were the best fit, followed by Dallas, and really I thought Washington would have been a great fit. They weren't somebody I think that was really going after him, but he needs to be with a strong point guard, for one. And just from a spacing perspective, Houston's going to use him in the wrong way, and we've already seen it. They ask their bigs to be outside too much. They ask their bigs to shoot too much. And if you ask Josh to shoot, he's going to oblige. I mean, that's the thing is, if you ask Josh to be on the block, he'll be on the block. You know, he'll take guys off, you know. He pretty much, I've always said this, Josh pretty much does what you ask of him. But you got to be careful what you're asking him to do. And I think Houston made a big mistake. I think really it was a play by Houston, kind of a jab. You know, Morey and Cuban are having this weird kind of showdown every year where it's like, okay, we're going to sign Parsons to keep him away from you. We're going to sign Josh Smith to keep him from Dallas because Dallas really wanted him. So they promised him a starting role, which he doesn't need to be in right now. They're playing next to Dwight, which means there's no space down low for Josh to operate. So he's got to operate on the elbow or outside the three-point arc, which he can do on the elbow if you make him a passer, but they're not doing a lot of that. So all of a sudden you got Josh hoisting shots again.
Yeah.
That's what you're going to get. Defensively, he can help that team. I still think he can be a useful defender, especially if you play him at the four.
It'll be interesting to see if they play the Blazers again. Him against – do you think he's a – I mean, I don't know. I can't really remember any times that he's guarded LaMarcus. But it would seem that that would be an interesting matchup.
Yeah.
Because Terrence Jones got his lunch eaten by LaMarcus in that Houston series. So they kind of need –
right.
They need somebody at that position that can guard LaMarcus, Tim Duncan, Dirk, all those guys and Blake, all those guys in the West.
Yeah, and I still think Josh can be a useful defensive guy. I just don't like playing them as much as they're playing them. I think at this stage, I think Josh would be best if you're confining his minutes to where he has only like 8 minutes, like 5 to 8 minutes that he has to focus on. Like, I feel like he just kind of gets lost in it and eventually just strays away from what he should be doing the longer you leave him on the floor consecutively. Like, if you're playing him 35 a night, he'll be fine for a little bit, and then he just kind of does Josh stuff. So I think the Clippers would have been a great spot for him behind Blake and DeAndre. They desperately need another big. I mean, they're playing Spencer Hall as a big baby, like, a ton of minutes, which is – just not good.
Big baby, man. Like,
he is a disaster. They were in town the other night, I think before Christmas on the 23rd, and I mean, he was atrocious on the basketball floor.
I used to love Big Baby, you know, and when he was on those Boston teams and stuff like that, but like, seems like Doc, I mean, everybody in the Twitter sphere, blogosphere, podcastosphere has, you know, opined on Doc, the GM, kind of screwing over, you know, what he has got going on as the coach. But, yeah, Josh would have been a great fit for them. Obviously would have been a lot better than playing Big Baby big minutes. And, yeah, that's one of the reasons I don't like the Clippers, obviously, is that they have to, you know, their fourth big or whatever, you know, even their third big. I mean, Haas can shoot, but I don't know what are they going to do to finish games. I was talking about this with Matt Tynan the other day. Like, you know, teams can foul DeAndre still, and the Blazers found a loophole to do it. They just run into DeAndre's screen, so he can't even set a screen. So you're going to need Spencer Hawes to outplay the center from other teams to win you an NBA championship. Like, that's what it's going to come down to.
Yeah, I don't know. And the other reason that kind of like the Clippers is, I mean, they have Mike Woodson on staff, and for everything, all the crap Woody gets, if there was anyone that ever knew how to get Josh to play well, it was Mike Woodson.
I didn't even think
Woody
about
and
that.
Larry Drew were the two guys that, and even Larry Drew actually did really well with him. But like Woody knows how to put Josh in positions where he's not going to screw around, and maybe Woody didn't want to deal with him. But I had never thought that their relationship was really particularly bad. I don't know. I thought the Clippers were a good fit. I thought Dallas could have worked, mainly because they run a lot of pick and rolls with Tyson, so I think there's space on the baseline for Josh in that offense. And I trust Rick Carlisle a lot more than Kevin McHale to put him in the right positions. I think that's the other thing.
Yeah.
I don't trust McHale to get Josh where he needs to be at all. I just don't. I think he's an okay coach, but I just don't think he is a he doesn't really construct an offense. They're a very flow team and just kind of play four out, and Josh is the fourth out, and that's not good.
I also think that there's – I mean, just from everything you hear about Dwight, that him and Josh Smith being, like, besties is not necessarily the best thing, I would think, because it seems like it's already hard enough to get Dwight to just focus on playing basketball and not on farting, etc. And, like, then you have another guy in there that is his friend that enables him. I don't know if that is really going to work out. And I don't know what it is with Houston, but I have this striking sense that, like, maybe Morey's starting to get it a little bit, but it seems like there's something about, like, chemistry and how guys work that, like, they don't get.
No, I think that's the biggest flaw is
it's all numbers.
Yeah, it's like, okay, well, this fits here, like, that'll work, but that's great until, I mean, personality's huge, you know, and if personalities don't mesh, and, I mean, it happened with Lynn and Harden, they didn't mesh. It's happened with a bunch of guys on that team where it's like, okay, yeah, you have good players and, you know, I think some things will work. But I didn't love Josh as a fit with that team. I really don't know the dynamic between him and Dwight, their relationship. Like, I know they're friends. I know they talk. But they never even said they really wanted to play together. Like, we'd ask, like, during the off season, I would ask Josh, like, hey, you know, are you going to try to push Dwight to come here? And he'd be like, meh. Like, I don't think they ever really had, like, a huge desire to play together. Like, they like to talk to each other, but that's about it.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm a little strapped for time today.
Yeah.
And it's New Year's Eve. Happy New Year, Robbie. Thank you for coming on. We didn't get to Temecula. But I think it's been well covered, on the internet this past week, but thanks for coming on. Thanks for talking Hawks. Thanks for talking Josh. All right. Well, thanks for joining and talk to you later, man.
Absolutely, man. Looking forward to this, this Hawks Blazers game. Should be fun. Get some money, get your budget.